much. Okay. Okay, shalom, everybody. Shalom. Shalom, shalom. Okay, yeah, so my name is Doichi. I'm originally from a place called Teaneck, New Jersey. Anybody in New Jersey? Yay! Yeah. So yeah, New Jersey was so amazing that I left there about 14 years ago, and I made the move to the Holy Land. And there I was, having made the move to the Holy Land. I'm a few weeks into it, and I'm wandering around the streets of the old city of Jerusalem, and I bump into a few people I know from Toronto, Canada. There you go. So me and them get to talking, and with them there was this other young lady, me and her get to talking. What do you know, to make a short story shorter, me and this gal end up getting hitched. And so it just goes to show you that some people come to the old city of Jerusalem for God, other people for the ladies. So since then, thank God we've been blessed to live in a bunch of locations here in the Holy Land. We lived a couple of years in an area called Gush Etzion, about 20 minutes south of Yerushalayim, I'm sure you know it. We lived 2 years in Be'er Sheva in the south, across the street from Ben Gurion University. We were involved with Jewish outreach on the campus there. And we lived a year in a neighborhood called Katamon, I'm sure you're familiar with. And thank God, here we are actually for the last 8 years or so, actually living in the old city of Jerusalem, living in a place overlooking the spot that we met. There you go. It goes over well with the women's crafts. Yes, okay. So anyway, this is a great story, but actually has nothing to do with why I'm here talking to you today. What brings me here to talk to you today is that when I was growing up, and I'm sure there are people here from similar kind of background, but when I was growing up, anything I ever heard about Judaism was a lot about the what's of Judaism and the how's of Judaism, what to do, how to do it, but like, why on earth should I be involved in this? Why on earth might I care? Why on earth might it make a difference in my life? Somehow those whys were always passed over. And so growing up, this always bothered me. And so when I had the opportunity, I wanted to check some of this Jewish stuff out for myself. So I came here to Israel and kind of started searching things out. And this started out as a philosophical pursuit, asking some of these bigger questions. What should we do if there's God? What should we do if God gave the Torah to the Jewish people? All these bigger questions. But anyway, ultimately this evolved into also something a little more personal, a little more deeper, a little more to the more spiritual side of things. And so, really, these types of things, both the philosophical side and the, because for me when I was growing up, it's kind of like they were building a building, but forgot to put the foundations in place. And so when I was growing up, this is what was bothering me. And so then as I got deeper into these things, this is what now inspires me. And so this is what I try to do pretty much ever since. I go around to different groups here in Israel, I go to other places, a lot of birthright groups that I come in contact with. Talk a little bit about the whys of Judaism, the deeper meaningfulness behind why we do what we do, and to go into more of this more spiritual stuff, more philosophical stuff. So that's a little bit my story, and I figure we're going to do some of this today. Also, especially since we're now in the time of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, it's good to get back to these basics. It's good to get into like really what are we in this for? What's the bigger story? What's the bigger picture? Because when we get a sense of the bigger picture, when we get a sense of some clarity, hopefully that gives us a little bit of boost, a little bit of an oomph, a little bit of a why and a reasoning and inspiration, and puts a little fire behind why we're doing what we're doing. So that's the last thing we're talking about. Are we okay with that? Okay, cool. If not, just lie to me and tell me it's okay. Okay, so here we go. And by the way, feel free, of course, at any time, feel free to chime in. Any questions, thoughts, ideas, anything you want to just throw out there, just put it out there, okay? Are you ready?
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay, so I think the conversation begins. Anytime we're talking about anything having to do with your, Jewish philosophy, Judaism, Jewish philosophy, Kabbalah, Chassidut, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, I think it begins with your average Joe, or perhaps in this case, your average Jew, walking down the street. Okay, so imagine you have your average Joe walking down the street. Imagine he sees a table sitting right there in the middle of the street. If you were to ask average Joe, where does this table come from? What are some possible answers average Joe might give you? Just gut response. What would average Joe say?
Someone threw it
out. What else we got?
A storm.
It fell off of a truck, a tree, it was stolen, it was China, IKEA, okay, all sorts of possibilities. But what Average Joe is not going to tell you, he's not going to say, oh, this table just popped out of nowhere. No, the Average Joe's not going to say this because the table is something that is in the finite. The table is something that is in time and space. And anything in time and space, we can know two things about it. We can know, number one, from nothing, nothing comes. And we can know, number two, nothing finite can create itself. Okay, meaning to say that the table didn't just pop out of nowhere, and the table didn't just bring itself into existence. Yeah? Does this sound familiar? Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Where'd you hear it before? You guys just nod at whatever I said without thinking. Okay, good. Perfect. Lemmings. I can bring much very easily. Here we go. Okay, so for example, let's take something else that is finite. Let us take you, sister. You ready? Liat. Here we go. Okay, Liat, are you in the finite? Are you in time and space? She's wondering how I know her name. Okay, you figured it out. Good. Okay, Liat. Liat, are you in the finite? Are you in time and space?
Yeah.
Yes, certainly the side of you that we are perceiving right now is in time and in space, which means already I can know two things about Liat. I can know, number one, from nothing, nothing comes. And I can know, number two, nothing finite can create itself. So it's not a matter of faith or belief, but I can know just by looking at Liat that she has or had parents. Yes? Or created in a lab by some scientists, maybe a test tube baby. Okay, all sorts of possibilities for now. Liat, parents, yes?
Yeah.
All right. Now, the parents, also in the finite, also in time and space?
Yeah.
Yeah, which means, okay, I can know two things about them. From nothing, nothing comes. Nothing finite can create itself. So it's not a matter of faith or belief, but I can know just by looking at Liat that she has or had grandparents. Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. Let's say you take this all the way back, right? To the first person, or if you want to include evolution for now, the first monkey, first ape-like being, first amoeba, first cell, first gas, first finite thing, so small you need a super-duper microscope in order to see it. But imagine you were to ask about that thing, where does it come from, right? So, of course, you can't see it with your eyeball, but still it is within the realm of the finite. Still it is within the bounds and limitations of time. It's within time and space. And so therefore the idea is that there, and so we, you know, of course we can know two things about the finite: from nothing, nothing comes, and nothing finite can create itself. So the idea is it's not a matter of faith or belief, but the idea is that we can know that there can be no other logical alternative other than the idea that there's something that's outside the laws of the finite, something that's outside the laws of time and space, which brought time and space and everything in it into existence, right? And this is what we call, in one word, the infinite, the infinite. Let's be clear what we're saying. We're saying nothing more than what it's not. Infinite, that which is not finite, that which is beyond the limitations of time and space. Right? And of course, in Judaism, we have a word for this. We call this God, right? There you go. That's good. God. G to the dash to the dizzy. Okay. So, that's about, okay, so now here's the bigger question, right? Now, so we got this God, we got this infinite being, okay? But the bigger question is, okay, so what? Who cares? What difference does this make? What difference does this mean to me? So there's an infinite being, so what? And by the way, why is it that he puts me here with a brain to figure out that he, she, it exists? Right? Like, what can I possibly do for the infinite being? And let's put this out there to you all. What can you possibly do for an infinite being? Okay, that is correct. Yeah, what do you want to say? Again, because time, everything in time and space, right, we see in this world, we intuit it on our own, but we definitely see in the world that anything that is within the bounds of time and space, anything that's time and space oriented, had a point beyond which it didn't exist, right? So like, for example, even in certain beliefs in science, they'll tell you something called the Big Bang, right? But that implies that there was something that caused the Big Bang to happen, right? So that means to say that everything in time and space goes back to a point where you ask the question, okay, well, what brought this thing in time and space into existence? You hear what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, but the idea that, like, there's a start to time and space.
Right.
The things in time and space, fine. But, like, you said that time and space itself had to start.
Well, time and space are under the rules of time and space. Right? So you're saying, oh, but the bigger idea of time and space. Okay, so it's bigger time and space. It's still time and space. Okay. So hold on. Going back to, right, what was the question set? Well, what can you possibly do for an infinite being? Yeah, go ahead. What do you say? What's your name, sister?
Sarah.
Go ahead, Sarah.
Whatever the infinite being tells you.
Ah, okay. So let's say you do something he tells you. By the way, we didn't even say that this guy ever talked to you yet. We didn't get to that yet. But we're getting very religious very quick. Slow down. Okay, so let's say you did something. Give me an example of what he might say to you to do.
Well, okay,
a mitzvah. You pick a mitzvah.
Kosher.
Kosher, okay. So now if you don't eat pork chops, what did this do for the infinite being now?
You don't know.
Okay, well, let's... What can you possibly... that's the point. Okay, so let's take it a bigger question. What can you possibly do that will make a change to the essence of the infinite? So that's the point I want to get to, right? If you pray to God, right, is God now infinite plus one? Right? No. So this is the idea, right? It's the same thing with the pork chops, of course. So the question is, okay, so if there's nothing, right, if there's nothing that... God's going to, quote-unquote, get out of the deal. So the next question becomes, what can
I
get out of the deal? Right. So let's see, what is it that people want? What is it that people are after? What is it that is at the core of every decision that we make? Go ahead.
You want to become closer to God. So
slow down, you guys. You're so religious over here, Rabbi. This isn't your interview. You're already in. So calm down. Okay. You want to get closer to God. Okay. Where are you from?
In LA.
Okay. Do you guys have TV in LA?
Yeah.
You never watched it because the whole time you were just focused on getting closer to God, right? No. Oh, okay. So then there was something else that was driving you to turn on TV. Okay. So let's see. What is it that is at the core of decisions that you make? Yeah. Go ahead. Okay, here we go. Happiness. Now, TV, that might make you happy, right? Okay. Bunch of happiness. What else we got?
Joy. Well, that's something.
You're right here, and I still can't hear you.
Sorry.
Say it louder.
No. It's the exact same thing.
I was from all those years of tuning out my mother, so I just... She's not going to listen to that recording. Yes? Contentment. Okay, contentment, happiness. What else we got? It's all good. Yeah, go ahead. Anybody else? What drives you is other people's expectations or people's expectations. Okay, good. That's all. Yeah, go ahead. What else? There we go. Now we're talking. Just gut response without philosophy. Pretend we're not in philosophy class. Just pretend you're on the street. What drives you? Okay, love, money, good one. What else? No, seriously. What do you want to say?
Satisfaction.
Okay. Synonymous to happiness and whatever she was going to say about spirituality. Yeah, go ahead.
Aren't all of those, like, secondary goods?
Yeah, so that's the point I'm going to make, right? The point I'm going to make is that really, who said happiness first? Who was that? Was that you?
No.
Who was it? Sorry.
Sure.
Okay, so really, I like to use the happiness answer. I'll tell you why. All those other answers are good. Love, money, contentment, even spirituality, God, all those things. Okay, really, I like to use the happiness answer because I think that the happiness answer is the umbrella organization, right? That they don't, like, people want love, but really because they think that love is going to bring them to happiness, right? People want some high because they think it's going to make them feel good and make them get to happiness. Money, love, also contentment, satisfaction. These are a lot of synonymous, very synonymous to the word happiness. So really, everyone wants to get the most pleasure, joy, happiness out of life. The next question becomes, if I want to get the most pleasure, joy, happiness out of life, actually, before we get there, let's show that this is true. Let's show that everyone wants to get the most pleasure, joy, happiness out of life. Right? So for example, here we have, what's your name, sister?
Eliana.
Eliana, imagine, here we are. Eliana's walking down the street. What do you know? It's her lucky day. She finds a wallet. She picks it up, cracks it open, looks inside, like, whoa, $500. It used to be worth something. And then she looks on the other side. Uh-oh. Contact information, email, cell phone. Eliana, dilemma, dilemma. What do? Do you keep that money or do you give it back? Not what do? What do?
I give back.
I give back. Okay, good. Eliana gives back the money. And now we have you. What's your name?
Hannah's
walking down the street. What do you know what she's looking at? She finds her wallet. She picks it up, cracks it open, looks inside, and look at that, $500. But uh-oh, Hannah, contact information, email, cell phone, dilemma, dilemma. Hannah, what do? Do you keep that money or do you give it back? So Hannah keeps the money. Okay, so here you have Eliana giving back the money, Hannah keeping the money, two people doing bipolar opposite things, but what I'd like to put forth is they're doing those opposite things but for the same basic reason, which is, of course,
happiness.
Happiness. Everyone wants to get the most pleasure, joy, happiness out of life. All right, so Hannah, we understand very easily. She says, I want to get the most pleasure, joy, happiness out of life, therefore I'm going to keep that money. But Eliana, she gives back the money, but she too takes back the pleasure of being good, feeling good, doing those things that society has brainwashed me to believe to be good, and I can feel the conceptual pat on my back from my society. And that makes me feel all nice and tingly inside. And so really we see that everyone wants to get the most pleasure, joy, happiness out of life. Next question becomes, if I want to get the most pleasure, joy, happiness out of life, next question is, how do we do that, right? And so we see that, so we want to take a look around the world. We want to see what's out there. What kind of pleasure, joy, happinesses do we have in the world? And so you see there's all, you take a look around the world, and there's all sorts of options out there. You got sex, drugs, rock and roll. But what do all these pleasures have in common?
A sore.
What else? You guys are so religious. What? They're temporary. Temporary. To use a word we've been using already, they're all in the? They're all in the finite, right? They're all limited. They're all within time and space. That yes, there's a high from them, but then you come down from that high. And so the next question becomes, so those are cool, or maybe they're not, but those are cool, right? But is there anything that goes beyond those limitations? Is there anything that goes beyond the finite? Anything that goes beyond being limited in time and space? Perhaps something we've mentioned already? The infinite. Okay, so now, here we go. You ready, LA? Here we go. So we see that really, so this is the Jewish idea, right? The Jewish idea is, look, everyone wants to get the most pleasure, joy, happiness out of life. And so therefore, the Jewish idea is, what I'm going to want to do is to build and facilitate a relationship, association, affiliation with the infinite. With the infinite. So the next question becomes, if I want to get the most pleasure, joy, happiness out of life, and the most is going to be to build and facilitate a relationship, association, affiliation with the infinite, the next question, of course, is going to be,
how?
How do I do that, right? Okay, so before we get to that question, we have a question over here. Go ahead.
What's the point of connecting to infinite if we're finite?
Ah, okay. Good question. If you don't believe in the infinite, if you don't believe in anything we just said right here, if you think everything we just said is wrong for whatever reason, so then it wouldn't make any sense because you wouldn't believe that there is an infinite, right? But that gets to a different question about what are we in terms of who are we as souls. I'm not sure we're going to be able to have the time to get to that today. What we mean by a soul, we'll see if we can squeeze it at the end. But certainly the point is that yes, that there's more to us than the external physical presentation, finite presentation, no doubt about it. But to go into the concept of soul right now, I'm not sure if we're going to have the time. So I apologize. If you want to chat about it afterwards, feel free to come on down. Okay? Okay. So if we want, to get the most pleasure, joy, happiness out of life, most is to build a relationship with the infinite. Next question is, okay, how are we going to build and facilitate a relationship, association, affiliation with the infinite, right? And so here is where, we can also take actually a page out of the book of Kabbalah, right? Because one of the ideas of Kabbalistic thought, little known fact, is of course we know that the word Kabbalah is from the Hebrew word lekabel, which means to receive, because we're receiving the deeper teachings of the Torah and deeper understandings of the world. However, another reason why Kabbalah is called Kabbalah is because it's related to the Hebrew word makbil. Makbil means, anybody know? Any Israelis here? No. Makbil means parallel. Parallel. Because one of the foundational principles of all of Kabbalistic thought is that everything in the physical is a parallel to a deeper spiritual reality. Anything you see in the physical reality is a parallel and projection of a deeper spiritual reality. And so therefore, if I'm going to want to talk about building my relationship with the infinite, one of the ways I'm going to be able to understand how to do that is by looking at the parallel to that that we have in our own lives. Right? So the parallel to our relationship with the infinite, clearly, would be relationships in this world. If we can understand how relationships work in this world, with the proper wisdom, we should hopefully be able to pull out some principles about how relationships operate, refine them in a clear way, and apply them to our relationship with the infinite. Because the only reason why they work the way they work in our lives is because the relationships that we have in our lives are a parallel and projection of our ultimate relationship, our ultimate match made in heaven, our relationship with the infinite. So does everyone understand what we're doing here? We're going to look at relationships, how relationships work in our life, understand them, and then see them as a parallel and a projection of our relationship with the infinite. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, question.
Just a comment.
Please.
That's like, I feel like that's even like it's Kabbalah, but I feel like it's also humanistic qualities. Like,
Humanistic qualities. Okay,
what? A tangible mitzvah that we can connect to makes it more real for us.
Makes it more.
And so, connecting things to like. Make it more real for us, and that, like, it, I don't know, like, that's
right. So that's a good point, but there's just one thing I would reverse in what you said, and that is a lot of times we say, okay, so the way I am is how it is, and then God is something like this, a parallel to this. What we're saying, though, is the opposite. We are the parallel. Our situation is the parallel, the projection to the real situation, right? So, like, for example. People think that for example, people a lot of times think, you ready, LA? For example, people think that the reason why why do we make a blessing on a fruit, right? So some people think like, okay, you know, there was this wonderful tasting fruit and some dude with a bigger beard than me said, you know what, we should bless God on this thing. Let's make a blessing, right? So what we're saying is that it worked in the opposite way. That really first there is a spiritual concept called the blessing, and then off of that God makes a fruit and says, okay, so let me give them a fruit so that it can be a vehicle by which you can have something called the blessing. There's a difference that totally transforms everything. The spiritual isn't a bounce off of the physical. The physical is a bounce off of the spiritual. So that's what we're saying right now. But I like your point. I'm just saying it's what we're trying to say also is it's reverse. Okay, so here we go. We're going to go into relationships. Okay, we're going to go talk about, we're going to pull out a couple of principles from relationships. Are you ready? Can I get a yeah?
Yeah.
Good. Okay, so here we go. Principle number one about relationships for today, you got to pay close attention or else you will miss it. You ready? Principle number one for today is that in any relationship, the quality of relationship depends on your ability to choose it, and choosing it means you have to have a real ability to destroy it. Okay, who's the note takers here? Oh, there's no note takers here? It's a girl's school, no? There you go. Admit it. So can you repeat that back to me? I'm just kidding. You ready? It was just a joke. You ready? I'll do it one more time. The quality of a relationship depends on your ability to choose it, and choosing it means you have to be able to destroy it. Only when you have the ability to destroy the relationship, only then when you choose it, is that choice a real choice. If you did not understand what I just said, stick with me for the next 5 minutes. We will come back to that phrase, and I promise you, God willing, it will make 1,000% sense. No problem. Okay, you ready? Here we go. For example, can you think of a relationship that you did not choose? Can you think of a relationship you did not choose? Go ahead.
Parents,
right? And that's why in a healthy situation, and everything we're talking today, we're talking about a healthy situation. That's why in a healthy situation, the parents are going to love the kids more than the kids love the parents. Now, at first, it seems like, hold on a second, that doesn't make any sense. After all, healthy situation. The kid is born, right? What do the parents do for the kid?
Everything.
What is the kid consciously doing for the parents?
Nothing.
And you're going to tell me that it's the parent, that the parents are going to end up loving the kids more than the kids love the parents giving everything, the kids getting everything, the parents giving everything, the kids giving nothing consciously. You're going to tell me at the end of this, it's going to be the parents that love the kids more than the kids love the parents? And of course the answer is yes, because as we know, you've heard it a million times, that the love that we're really into and we really feel and we really want is going to be based and rooted in the giving that we do, right? That the extent of I give of my, right? We're not talking about giving a dollar to the guy in the street. That's very nice. Not what I'm talking about here. What I'm talking about here is real giving of self. The extent we give of ourselves towards another, we invest of ourselves towards another, we make real choices and internal and in a certain respect sacrifices of what our initial surface desires are for a deeper desire in order to go ahead and give to a certain person. You extend of your identity towards that person, and what do you know? You come to love the other like you love yourself. Right? But fast forward 20 years approximately down the road. And here we have, let's do it. Ready? No. It's always the one that turns around. So, you.
Okay.
You ready? Wait, remind me, what's your name? Oh, you're not Riyadh. That was Riyadh. What's your name?
Sherelle.
Sherelle, okay. So Sherelle, you ready to play? Here we go. By the way, if this example is no good for you,
okay. You
tell me, we pass it off to another victim.
Okay.
So Sherelle, would you like, at some point in your life, would you like to get married?
Yes.
Okay. Now here's what I don't understand. No, that wasn't a proposal. I was talking about this is general. Okay. If it was me, I would have been down on one knee. Okay. So now here's what I don't get. You say, Sherelle, that at some point you would like to get married to somebody.
Okay.
So now, here's what I don't get. Growing up, the parents feed you?
Yes.
All right. Clothe you?
Yes.
Put a roof over your head?
Yes.
Now, did you ever do anything to upset these people?
Yes.
Ever make anyone cry?
Yes.
Yes. All right. So now, after this, the parents still feed you?
Yes.
Still clothe you?
Yes, we do.
Still put a roof over your head? Sounds like you got a pretty sweet deal going there. And you're telling me you're going to leave this relationship with the parents as the primary relationship in your life and transition to a relationship with some guy where if you say to him what you said to your mother, you're going to be in a heck of a lot of trouble. Isn't that true?
Yes, it is.
So, obvious question here. Why would an intelligent person such as yourself do something as seemingly idiotic as this?
Because of love.
It's like a Disney movie. All right. So let's put this question, right? Let's put this question out there to the masses here. Good answer, though. I never got, believe that, believe it or not, I've given this thing over like literally maybe close to 1,000 times. No one actually ever said that. Most people tell me that, like, oh, you're convincing me out of it. But it's usually guys, though, honestly. It's a mixed group or a guys group. I'm picking guys in this question. So, okay. So, fine. So let me put this question out there to everybody, right? Why is it that we make this move? If we can leave aside the obvious physical reasons and also societal conditioning, just relationship-wise, lovey-dovey-wise, why is it that we make this move? Right? And you said love, and that's a good answer. What I want to get to is the core, and what is the difference, and what causes the difference of the love or the feeling of the experience of the spouse kind of relationship to be different and more intense, more high, more elevated, more refined than the parent relationship. Right? Okay? So that's the question here. Why is it that we make this move to transition from the relationship with the parents, from the relationship with the parents as the primary relationship in our life, to the relationship with the spouse as primary relationship in our life? Just relationship-wise, lovey-dovey-wise, emotional-wise, why do we do this? Don't tell me God said so.
No, I'm not.
Go.
I was going to say that, so it gives a person the equal opportunity to be able to appreciate someone else. Like, being a kid, you really don't appreciate as much as you should. And when you're older and more mature, you're able to appreciate someone else much more and gives you a chance to grow with someone else.
Okay, good. Well, good. It's going to be part of it. It's going to be part of what I said. You want to call on her?
No, I'm just saying there is someone over there.
There's someone there. Yes, it's you. The one who had the hand up. Yes. It's like her, but except you actually had the hand up. Yeah, go ahead.
That's true. Because if you guys saw people would say that your parents love you quite a bit, they have to quite a bit. Like, you're their child, so technically, you know, in most, whatever, healthy homes, you technically are forced to love your kid because, you know, they can do whatever
they
want.
Are you from New Jersey?
No.
Okay, go on.
I'm Jersey.
Okay, go on.
No, so you want to find somebody
who's like, right, there was a sports spirit, like, I know what you mean, yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah,
hold on a second, she was next.
Me?
Yeah, the one with the hand up, yes.
Your parents, like, you don't really cultivate, like, a relationship with them, like, as an, like, adult, it's more, like, based on what you have as a child, but with, like, a spouse, because you're, like, fully an adult, when you meet them, then you have, like, similar, like, goals and interests.
Cool, okay. What you guys are saying so far, hold on everybody. What you guys are saying so far, what I'm hearing is like, with the parents it's kind of like this, with the spouse it's kind of like this. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Right, the parents kind of above, quote unquote. The spouse is kind of more of a mutual thing. I don't want to say anything else other than that, just because we're running out of time. I don't want to lose it. Go ahead. Okay, so I shy away, I try to keep away from the kids' answer because, well, it might be true or partially true, and because if God forbid a person cannot have kids, I think there's still a yearning for this kind of relationship. So I try to keep away from that, although it certainly could be a factor. Go ahead, what else?
Why does it have to be either or? Like, your parents, you and your parents still have a relationship when you get married.
Yes,
still love
yes.
You.
Okay, so good. You try to do that with your husband and tell him that you're on even ground with the parents. You're going to both share priority number one, parents and the kids. You know, by the way, in halacha, actually, women don't have the halacha for kibud av ve'im when they're married, actually, believe it or not, because of this. Anyways, what else we got? Anybody else? Yeah.
What?
Say it. So you said also an important word there. She said choice, if I got you right. Choice, you're choosing the spouse, right? Some married people will say that that's not true, but okay, fine. So I'm sure there's more to say here. I want to try to bring everything, a piece of what everybody said together here and hopefully add to it. And that is like this. Now in terms of the relationship, in the relationship with the parents, again, healthy relationship we're talking about here. In the relationship with the parents, the relationship is so stable, it's almost like it's not even there. Right? You do something good, you get result X. You do something bad, you still basically get result X. The relationship's still functioning, still moving, it's okay. Still got the food, still got the, you know, the roof over your head, the whole thing. At some point you grow up. You become more mature, someone mentioned that word, become more independent, and this relationship starts to make you a little bit sick. Like, where's the me in the relationship? Where's the assertion of the I? Where do my choices and what I do actually make a difference in terms of the functioning of this relationship? They're like, yes, of course, the relationship will fluctuate with the parents a little bit based on if you do something good or something not so good. But like, come on, in a healthy situation, relationship, the parents are like, aren't going to leave you unless you come at them with a chainsaw, right? So at some point we grow up, we become more mature, and we start to transition from this relationship with the parents as primary relationship in our life. Don't worry, you still have them there, God willing, right? But then as primary relationship in our life, to a relationship with the spouse or the guy-gal kind of relationship where you do something good, the relationship gets much higher in a hurry. But that's because if you would do something bad, the relationship gets bad, it gets real bad in a hurry, right? And so obvious question here is, right, that some people like to talk about, okay, well, I want a stable relationship, right? Like, imagine a gal goes over to a guy and says, I want a stable relationship with you. Right, so what is she saying to him? Is she saying to him that I want a relationship with you like I have with my parents? No, right? No. She's saying, I mean, maybe middle America, but that's something. Okay, really what's she saying? She's saying, look, I want to take this inherently delicate relationship with you. Right? I want to take this inherently delicate relationship with you. This relationship where if you do the right things, the relationship will get super high. And if we don't, it'll get super bad in a hurry. I want to take this delicate relationship with you. This relationship where there is a real pull opportunity desire to make a move that will go the other way. And nevertheless, to strengthen myself over myself, to choose towards that other, towards that relationship, and then tomorrow, when there's a real pull opportunity, desire to make a choice that will destroy the relationship, nevertheless, once again, to strengthen ourselves over ourselves, to choose towards that relationship, towards that other, towards that commitment, then do it again next week, then do it again next month, then do it again next year, then do it again next decade. In the end, I will have taken and built taken this delicate relationship, this delicate spouse kind of guy-gal kind of relationship, I'll have taken it and built it into a stable relationship. But that stability is real. That stability is yours. That stability is based on the sum total of the choices that you made. Right? That stability is totally different than the stability of the relationship with the parents. Where in the relationship with the parents, the stability is kind of already given to you, but you can't really be given a relationship. Right, and so we leave that relationship as the primary relationship as we get older, as we become more, hopefully, mature, independent, more refined, and we go to a relationship where we're leaving the inherent stability of the relationship with the parents and transitioning to the inherent delicacy of the relationship with the spouse, because there is a real assertion of the I, there's a real assertion of the self. My choices really do make a difference, and if I can make the constant choices towards that other, towards that person who's on the same level as me, towards that commitment, and then despite the fact there's a real pull to choose against a relationship in a way that'll destroy it, if I can constantly make those choices towards a relationship, towards that other, towards a commitment, me and the other individual, right, we go ahead and we will build that inherently delicate relationship into a stable relationship. And that stability is on a totally different level, totally elevated, more refined, dignified level from the relationship with the parents. So, and this is really what's at the core, I think, of our yearning for that kind of relationship. Does this make sense? Do you feel what I'm saying? Is that, yes, no, maybe, right? So this explains the necessity in Judaism for the concept of free will choice. You have to have the real free will capacity to make a choice that will destroy your relationship with the infinite, in order that when you go ahead and choose towards the relationship with the infinite, that choice is a real choice. Only then can you have a spouse-like relationship with the infinite. You hear that idea? Meaning to say that really, a lot of times we talk about our relationship with Hashem, relationship with God, as a parent kind of relationship, right? Our God, our Father, Avinu Malkeinu, and that's fine, and there's a place for that. But that is not really the ideal. That is not the goal. As a matter of fact, in most situations you find, except for maybe when it's compared to an Eved, but in most situations, the concept of God as the Father is the fallback position. It's not really the ideal or the goal. And I will prove it to you two ways. When is it that we talk about God as the Father? Say again? Can't hear you. Rosh Hashanah, sure, that's one time. If you see, think about it, like, let's take Avinu Malkeinu, for example. When do we say Avinu Malkeinu? Fast days, Aseret Yemei Tshuva, right? Those are times I messed up, so God, forgive me like a parent forgives a child, right? When we mess up, that's when we start talking about God as a Father. Really, what's the ideal? The ideal is the spouse relationship, but I'll prove it to you right now. Think about it. What is the heyday of all of Jewish history? You tell me. Matan Torah. There were two possible answers you could give me. When the Jewish people get the Torah at Har Sinai, are also during the times of the Beis HaMikdash, right? When the Jewish people get the Torah at Har Sinai, what is that compared to?
A wedding.
Ah, spouse relationship, right? And by the way, if you look in the commentaries about the Beis HaMikdash, the concept of the Beis HaMikdash was basically, according to the commentaries, is how do we take this high of the Mount Sinai, the Har Sinai experience, and package it and live with it on an ongoing basis. That was the Beis HaMikdash. So again, spouse relationship, right? And so this is the ideal, right? If we mess that up, if we're off there, so then we fall back on the father kind of, on the parent kind of paradigm of God, right? And so of course it's necessary, it's real, we need it. But the ideal, if we want to get to a higher level relationship with the infinite, that spouse-like relationship with the infinite, it entails something called free will choice. And so this is what free will is all about. This is what our free will is all about. The idea to go, that we should have a capacity to make a decision that will move us away from the infinite, nor that when we go ahead and make the choice towards God, that choice is a real choice. This is where we access this higher level spouse-like relationship with the infinite. So this is principle number one of relationships for today, that the quality of relationship depends on your ability to choose it. And choosing it means you have to have the real ability to destroy it. Only when you have a real ability to destroy the relationship, only then when you go ahead and choose towards that relationship, is that choice a real choice. Who's with me so far? Okay, so I'm going to give you one more point on what we just said. There's other things to say, but we're not going to have a chance to say them. One more point on what we just said, and that is sometimes people are bothered by this. Say, hold on a second, what is this? You're farther from God, you're closer to God. Aren't you always one with God? We just said God's infinite. Aren't you always one with God? And so in order to try to explain this concept, I think a good thing to compare it to is just, again, look at, like imagine. Imagine you have two people who get married. Right? And of course, in Judaism, a marriage is a certain kind of coming together of two souls into one. Right? So imagine you have two people get married, and immediately after the wedding, the day after the wedding, they are split up and they're sent to different locations. One of them goes to China, the other one goes to France. Okay, and they have no communication with each other whatsoever. Are they still married? Yes, right? They're still connected at the soul. They're still one at the core. Right? Okay, 70 years go by. Still no communication, nothing. Are they still married?
Yes.
Yes, right? Let's say you bring these two people back together for their 70th wedding anniversary. Still married.
Yeah.
Right? Still one at the core, right? But how much, so they bring these two people back, so yes, of course, they're still one at the core, but how much has this internal, essential, how much has this oneness truly been expressed and manifest and lived out and brought forth and felt, right? Not so much, right? See, this is the idea. Yes, you're always one with God. You're always married to God. You don't have to be a nun. You already are. You're born it. Right? But how much is that inner oneness and that essential oneness, how much is that lived forth? How much is that lived out? How much is that brought forth? How much is that expressed? How much is that manifest? How much is that real? How much is that being lived out? That's determined by the choices that we make. To the extent we go ahead and make the free will choices, make the choices to build that relationship with the infinite, that's the extent it's going to be there. To the extent not, so there'll be a certain loss of potential in that, right? And so this is the idea, that the quality of relationship depends on your ability to choose it, and that means having the real opportunity to destroy it. And so to understand then that any time we have a certain side of ourselves that is pulling us away from relationship with the infinite, from relationship with God, from Torah, from mitzvot, etc., etc., to see that this, well, on the one hand, yes, this is an obstacle, but to look at it from a higher light and to say, this is an opportunity, right? This is an opportunity where I have two roads in front of me, right? I could be pulled away from it, right? But that's opening the door for me to have a much higher, much more refined and deeper relationship with God by going ahead and making the choice towards God, even in this opportunity where I'm being pulled to go away from God or to do something against Torah or just to do something that's a waste of time, right? And so this is that just one principle, I guess, that I want to give you over today, this concept of free will and seeing this idea as, explain this hopefully in a way that you haven't heard it before and to be able to understand and see these opportunities that we're presented with as not just obstacles but also from a higher level and be able to see them as opportunities for amazing growth and opportunity to have a relationship with God. So, they tell me that's all my time for today, but there's a question or an idea coming over there. So I'll take that question. Afterwards, if anyone wants to chat, we will chat. And also, I have a couple of books here I'm going to tell you about in a second. But go ahead.
Is it possible to
Yeah, you could say that. I mean, I think that's fair to say. And certainly Jewishly, it seems that we have to keep a certain level of this parent kind of concept. Like, there's a whole, obviously, halachot of kibud avim and what that means, which is, by the way, very misunderstood. A lot of the things that people think are kibud avim or actually don't fall under the category of kibud avim. A lot of what people think is not kibud avim actually is what kibud avim is. Separate conversation. But can it be developed as well? In addition, I think to a certain extent, but I think also you have to be careful to not cross certain lines. As Judaism kind of tells you that you're supposed to put the parents on the pedestal a little bit. So, but yeah, there's where to move on that. Sure, I think so. Okay, before we go, if anyone's interested, I have a couple of books here with me. I'll get that. Okay, here's one. Called Human by Choice, A Kabbalistic Path to Self-Help. If anybody's interested on more ideas of living consciously, personal freedom, personal joy, that kind of stuff, personal growth, which is, I think, is a good time of year for it. So this is one option for you. And also, here we have something called The Case for Judaism, which goes into those ideas which I mentioned at the beginning, which is why should we believe there's God, why should we believe God gave the Torah to the Jewish people, why should we believe the Oral Torah to be legit and relevant, giving what is hopefully some solid answers to these questions, and more. Anyone is interested, so it's 40 shekels each, you're welcome to come up and take a look, and I hope this is meaningful. I hope you enjoyed it. If anyone wants to chat a little bit, come on up, okay? Have a wonderful day, have a wonderful year.